Good morning, everyone. The first case on today's call is 04-4045, Daniel Hoagland versus Clear Lake, Town of Clear Lake, Indiana. Mr. Price.
May it please the court. I'm John Price, counsel for the four appellants in this case, which include Dan and Karen Hoagland, who are with us here today. This case would appear to be one of first impression in this circuit. Six other circuits, including the Supreme Court, have ruled on similar issues in aviation cases. But with all due respect, the district court's conclusion that this case was about Dan Hoagland's preferred method of commuting to work is not strictly accurate, as you can tell from the amicus briefs that have been filed.
Well, it is pretty accurate, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's pretty accurate.
It's part of the fact pattern.
He uses the helicopter to go to Fort Wayne.
It is true that it's part of the fact pattern, but that fact pattern, as a lot of cases do, implies a lot of other legal implications, which I think are important for this court, especially since the Seventh hasn't really addressed this issue yet. The Supreme Court, of course, did in the city of Burbank, and five other circuits, the first, the second, the third, the ninth, and the 11th, have followed Burbank. The sixth specifically didn't follow Burbank, but there's a very good reason why they didn't, because the fact pattern there was completely different, which I'd like to discuss with you.
Well, those are all noise cases, aren't they?
Not really. They were characterized that way in the lower court opinion. But let me touch on this real quick. In the First Circuit, that was about pilot fitness besides noise. In the Second Circuit, the National Helicopter case, that was about flight paths, which this case is about, because the town of Clear Lake has told my client that he can only take off from his heliport in two different directions. The other two he can't do. In the Third Circuit, in Abdullah, that was about aviation safety. In the Ninth, in the San Diego case, that was about when planes may fly. And in the 11th, that also was about night flight operations and setting traffic patterns. The town of Clear Lake has told my client, you can't fly before 6 in the morning or after 9 in the evening. You can't turn your rotor blades at a certain time of the day. When you take off, as I mentioned, you can only go two different directions. You yourself are the only person that can fly into this airport, even though it's an FAA-approved airport, and nobody else can use it. In addition
well,
to that...
Are you appealing all those issues, or are you appealing the location of the airport itself or the heliport?
Well, the heliport was located in its present location long before the town of Clear Lake ever had an ordinance. And they've admitted that in their briefing that they did
not. Well, they've got an ordinance now, though.
Unfortunately, the new ordinance, Your Honor, has a fatal flaw, and that is that it says that the heliport goes out of existence in 5 years. If that were allowed to stand, the FAA administrator might as well look for new work, because every town in the country could decide what airport to close up. The initial siting question, I think, is pretty important, because in the district court opinion, Magistrate Cosby relied pretty heavily on Gustafson, the Sixth Circuit case, and that involved whether or not a seaplane, could land on a public lake with an ordinance that for 30 years had said nobody could land on a public lake. Now, contrast that, if you would, with this case, where Dan Hoagland has been flying for several years in and out of his heliport before they even passed an ordinance. And then once they did pass the ordinance, they said it after 5 years, your heliport goes out of existence. So much for the grandfathering concept. As was pointed out in the two amicus briefs, if the town of Clear Lake can do to Dan Hoagland what they have done repeatedly here, then the whole concept of federal preemption and national sovereignty over airspace would go out the window.
That you mentioned the amicus briefs. That's sort of interesting. I thought that the same lawyer wrote a amicus brief for these two entities. And
that's true. They both come out of the same area
sort
of the
state. Unusual. I don't recall seeing that in the 10 years I've been here.
Well, they both come out of the same area of the state. I know that. They're both from the Fort Wayne area. Senator Cruz represents a constituency up near Fort Wayne, and the SATS conference is based in that same area.
Senator's just raising a state law issue. Has that been litigated? You're not litigating that here, I guess.
That's really not the major issue before the court, no. It is an issue that was not addressed by the district court, however, because this heliport is licensed both by the federal government and the state government. And under our home rule statute, the town of Clear Lake just does not have the authority to tell Dan Hoagland what to do on a state-authorized heliport. They just don't have that authority.
Well, what if the city had safety concerns and thought it best to enact an ordinance preventing the construction of an airport or helipad next to an elementary school? Would that be preempted?
I don't think so. I think the Supreme Court in Burbank, the city of Burbank, made it quite clear that if a local unit of government wants to make a decision concerning siting, one of their phrases was next to a hospital or a school or whatever, they certainly have the authority to do that. And I would agree. That's not the question here. The town of Clear Lake, in their brief, is attempting to make that the question because they've said repeatedly that Dan Hoagland wants to put his heliport wherever he wants to. That's not the issue. He's already located. He's grandfathered in. They've now come to him and said, way after the fact, we want you to stop using that heliport.
Well, do you agree that if this case, so you agree that if this was about an initial sitting, the ordinance would not be preempted?
Oh, I think that's right.
But what is the real difference? Isn't any relation to service similar in both instances?
Well, it could be, but tangentially probably. The restriction in the FAA against pricing routes and service would be one of the reasons why a local unit of government could have a lot to do, make the final decision about siting. But what's happened here is that not only does the town of Clear Lake want to close the heliport, they've told Dan Hoagland how he can operate his heliport. And even to the point of saying, we want to see your pilot's license. We want to see your continuing annual approval by the FAA.
You're not appealing those things, are you, as I understand it?
No, I raise those because they help show the pattern that's involved in the town of Clear Lake establishing itself as sort of a...
What's the area of the town that we're talking about?
I'm sorry?
What's the area of the town of Clear Lake?
The town of Clear Lake is almost exclusively centered around Clear Lake, an old deep lake in northeast Indiana, so far northeast that you go one way, you're in Ohio, and another way, you're in Michigan. His heliport is at the extremity of the town. If you look from the heliport west, all you see is farm fields. If you look to the south, all you see is farm fields.
Why didn't he put his heliport out in the country then?
Actually, it is. When he put it in, it is out in the country. But the initial siting was never opposed, and there was never any ordinance when he built his heliport. It was approved by the FAA for that location. And so the question now is, can a town come along once the airport's already located and say, you have to close? That's a federal preemption question.
What kind of preemption?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. The Supreme Court in City of Burbank said that express preemption is probably not the kind that's encompassed here. This is probably field preemption, but it could also be the third kind of preemption in which the local unit of government has adopted something that's so in conflict with the federal statutes that they both can't stand together. And I would suggest that either one works, but to address the third for just a moment, when the town of Clear Lake, through this ordinance that they've adopted and the forced settlement agreement, have said to Dan Hoagland, you can only take off certain directions, you can only operate your rotors at certain times, they've substituted themselves for the FAA administrator, who under the law, under congressional act, that's the sovereign right and power of the FAA administrator. And they've intruded themselves into that. So it's either the second or third form of preemption, but probably not express preemption because, as Justice Rehnquist pointed out in his dissent, that's just not there. So consequently, we would urge the court not only to look at these five circuits that have held in the way that they have, but to find that the Gustafson case, which was cited by Magistrate Cosby, just really doesn't work because it's not even close. That's an original citing case, and it's not this case. The other case that we've referred to is certainly not controlling on this court, but it's instructive, and that's the Price versus Township of Fenton in Michigan. in which they looked at the same argument that you'll hear shortly, that it's okay for the town of Clear Lake to use their zoning ordinances to restrict the airport.
Do you think the town of Clear Lake could exercise right of eminent domain over this property if they were so inclined?
Well, we think they actually did exercise inverse.
Well, I know that's your claim that there's a compensable taking, but my question is, don't they have a right to take the property under their exercise of eminent domain?
That would be an interesting case. The courts of Indiana would have to see if you can close an airport in that manner. I don't know of anything in the statute that would prevent it, but that's not what.
No, but I mean, if they have that power, why don't they have this power? That's, I guess,
primarily because it's a preempted field. The town of Clear Lake cannot, under the
Federal
Aviation Act.
Well, it would preempt eminent domain, I guess, wouldn't it? I mean, if it preempts this, it would preempt that.
That would be a case of first impression. I don't know of any case like that.
Yeah, under your theory, if half the people that lived in the town of Clear Lake all wanted to have helicopter pads and go to and from their homes in helicopters, could they do it?
They couldn't now, because with the new ordinance, 154.05, that's an accepted use, and they'd have to go before the BZA and get permission to do so. When Dan Hoagland built his helicopter pad, there was literally no ordinance any place in the town that said anything at all about aviation. And there's a history of aviation, as you know from the record, of not only seaplanes, but another airport and another helicopter user. So there have been a lot of people who have been flying in and out, unlike Gustafson, where they had a 30-year ordinance that said you can't fly and land on our lake. Also in Gustafson, that involved a public lake, and here we have a private heliport on private land at the edge of town.
I just want to clarify something relating to your inverse condemnation claim. That is not based on Clear Lake's 2001 zoning ordinance amendment, is it?
No, because as the court pointed out, there's a timing problem.
Mm-hmm.
The inverse condemnation claim, under Magistrate Cosby's analysis, he said that the claim is not ripe, mm-hmm. but we would, with all respect, differ with that, because the lower court and the Steuben Superior Court in August of 2001 threw out the inverse condemnation claim as part of a partial summary judgment order. So we could not possibly do any more to make it more ripe, because he lost his right to proceed under the inverse condemnation claim when it was thrown out on summary judgment.
Well, why isn't the condemnation claim at least arguably covered by the settlement that was originally reached?
Big problem. Legal catch-22. Under the settlement agreement, Dan Hoagland was to be paid money as part of the settlement agreement. He would exchange some of those restrictions, and he would be paid money. To this date, the town of Clear Lake, with the singular exception of a very small part of the case concerning a permit that was litigated, has yet to pay him any money under the settlement agreement. So what's happened here is that he goes to Fort Wayne, Magistrate Cosby says, I'm sorry, you're not ripe yet. And he goes back there, and they say, I'm sorry, we're not going to pay you yet. And I see my light.
Reserve the rest of your time.
I'd like to reserve the rest of the time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Tubergen.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to argue this case. May it please the court, I am Dane Tubergen. I represent the town of Clear Lake and all of the other individual defendants. I have prepared remarks, but when I hear something that is just factually wrong, I have to deviate and clear something up. The ordinance that has been appealed, and the only matter that's at issue before this court, is whether the town of Clear Lake can enact an ordinance that provides that airports are not allowed unless there is a special exception granted for that land use. The ordinance does not direct Mr. Hoagland in his flight paths. It does not say what way he can turn his rotors. That's a matter that Mr. Hoagland agreed to in the settlement agreement on a prior lawsuit. It has nothing to do with this lawsuit. The only thing that the town of Clear Lake has done that is being appealed here is pass this ordinance that says airports are a use that must be approved by special exception. And that's a very, very common zoning ordinance.
Well, let me ask you this question. Could a city with an international airport decide that it no longer wanted the airport at its current site without running into federal preemption problems?
I believe, Your Honor, that it could.
Well, wouldn't that kind of ordinance relate to the service of many airlines?
No more than it does in this case tangentially. If you're going to purchase by eminent domain an airport, that relates to the price, route, or service. If you say, we don't want this airport here, tangentially, it does relate to price, route, or service. But what if a city shut down an existing airport, it may raise an issue of taking. And that may be an issue for inverse condemnation. And Indiana has an inverse condemnation statute. It has a legal procedure to be compensated if your land is taken.
Well, you said tangentially related, but how do you respond to Gustafson in the footnote where it said that once an airport is operating, it may be that only the FAA can regulate the noise control problem?
I agree with that. I agree entirely with that. That is the law. In fact, of the 78 cases cited in the appellant's brief and all of the cases cited in the amicus brief and all of the cases that I have ever read, that's really what the law is. The law boils down to this, Your Honor, in direct answer to your question. Whether or not land within a local governing body's jurisdiction may be used for the landing or taking off of aircraft is a matter for that local governing body. They may decide whether they want to allow that function or not. Once they do, the manner in which that airport is operated, the direction the planes take off, the times they may take off, pilot qualification, all of that is a matter for federal and sometimes state aviation authorities. So in noise abatement, which is probably what the majority of the cases are over noise abatement, in the guise of zoning, local units of government attempted to limit, for instance, the direction planes could take off or the times they might take off, or in the Price-Fenton Charter Township case, the number of takeoffs versus size of aircraft. All of that has to do with matters that are clearly under the jurisdiction of especially federal aviation authorities. That's not what we're dealing with here. The question here is whether or not a local unit of government has the authority to determine what activities may be conducted on the land within its jurisdiction. And that is part of the historic police powers of the states.
But what appellants point out is that here, this was a pre-existing heliport, and this case is not about an initial sighting.
I was tickled to hear the plaintiff admit that if this was an initial sighting, that there would not have been preemption, because I don't see any difference.
Well, it might affect the inverse condemnation aspect of the problem.
Well, certainly. I don't argue with that at all. And we have a law in Indiana that provides a method for determining compensation for any taking by government. But Clear Lake is a town of less than 300 people. It looks like a pretzel. It's simply a band of land surrounding a medium-sized freshwater lake in Steuben County. And the band of land is a road surrounding the lake, and then houses on the lakeside and garages on the roadside. And that's the town of Clear Lake. It has no industry. It has no commercial center, no businesses. It's 100% residential.
Doesn't even have a Walmart. Huh?
Doesn't even have a Walmart, Your Honor. And the fact that the town of Clear Lake failed in its land use plan and initial zoning ordinance to provide for a heliport, I don't think is too surprising. And the fact that the residents of the town don't want a heliport smack dab in the middle of town with all these other houses around, not across the street, I admit, but on either side, it's not surprising when Clear Lake sits in a rural area with miles of unimproved, some farmland, some forest land, for several miles around it.
Well, the impression I have is that the heliport was some distance from the houses.
No.
Did I miss that?
That's not correct.
How far away?
I couldn't tell you in feet, but it would be measured in yards, maybe.
So, less than a mile?
Oh, less than an eighth of a mile. Less than a sixteenth of a mile. It's across the street, literally. In zoning, the residents of the community have an opportunity to be heard about whether they want an activity being conducted. And the appellant's position is clearly, we don't care. We can, anybody with the wherewithal to build a private airport or heliport can do so. All they have to do is get the approval of the FAA. What's interesting, Your Honor, in the appendix are provided the letters of authority from the FAA at page 58. It's, I think, almost determinative, where the FAA, in allowing the heliport, says this determination does not mean FAA approval or disapproval of the physical development involved in the proposal. It is a determination with respect to the safe and efficient use of airspace by aircraft. It says, to go on, this determination in no way preempts or waives any ordinance, laws, or regulations of any other governmental body. Even the FAA, before the various courts of this land, take the position that local zoning authorities have the right, under our system of federalism and under their police powers, to determine the siting of an airport. Judge, you made a very interesting point. Couldn't they stop this by using their powers of eminent domain? They certainly could. And as Mr. Price pointed out, maybe that's what they've done. And maybe they should pay for it. But we have a procedure in Indiana for that, and let them try it. It doesn't belong before this court. I won't give a long recitation of quotes, but hear the language of just a couple of the federal courts. And these are all in the brief in the Full-Burns case. No federal law gives a citizen the right to operate an airport free of local zoning control. In the Condor case, which is the Eighth Circuit from Minneapolis, we see no conflict between a city's regulatory power over land use and the federal regulation of airspace, and have found no case recognizing a conflict. That was a case dealing with the siting of a heliport. There was a study done by a professional who said, hey, this is an ideal spot for a heliport, but the people surrounding the area didn't want it, and the local zoning authority disapproved it. And the Eighth Circuit said that's their right to determine how they use the land in their jurisdiction.
Mr. Hoagland, what would the city's or the town's position be if he applied for a special use exemption and offered to move the helipad, let's say?
I don't know, but he's never applied for any special exception.
Well, hypothetically, let's say he applied and said, I'm going to put it a half a mile away from where it presently is.
I don't think the city would have any jurisdiction that far away.
Well, I don't know how big the city is, he said. But let's say it's just still within the town. He was going to relocate it into a different area.
I'm only guessing, Your Honor, but there are considerations of safety. And it could be based possibly even on a misunderstanding of the issues of safety by the town. But it's still their right to make that determination. My guess is that anywhere in the town, because the entire town is one house after another along this lake, that they don't want a heliport or a helicopter with rotating blades right next to their house. Now, the farther away they go, the less objection there would be. I think that's the point. But I have to say I'm only guessing there. Okay. But appellant has never sought a special exception. Your Honor, I learned long ago that you don't have to use all of your time. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tubergen.
Let me start, if I may please, with the statement that the heliport is smack dab in the middle of town. Page 53 of the appendix, this shows approximately the west half of Clear Lake, and as you can see, as counsel mentioned, the homes are around the side with a road between the homes and the garages in many instances. The location of the west heliport is here, the east one is immediately there. These are the fields that I mentioned to the south and the fields to the west. To the suggestion that what would happen if he were to move it a half a mile further, first of all, I think there's a significant problem since when he built it there was no ordinance restricting a heliport to do that, but let's take that for the moment.
Well, they probably thought no one would build a heliport. So.
I don't know what they thought. That's
they thought it was illegal without an ordinance, and then they found out that the ordinance didn't cover it and passed a new ordinance.
Actually, I think the record doesn't sustain that because the heliport's been in existence for a long time before they even decided
to. Are there maintenance facilities in connection with this?
That's actually part of the case. There is a maintenance building here and a storage building that there was a dispute concerning, and that sets right here where the helicopter is stored. The second issue that
does he have mechanics on duty there or what?
When it needs to be fixed, he can take it to a location. The second thing I'd like to address
quickly. Could he host a convention of helicopter owners and invite everybody who owns helicopters to come to Clear Lake for a conference?
He cannot.
Under your theory, if he has a right to keep his helicopter pad there, could he do that?
No, he couldn't, because under the agreement, he's the only person that can use it. And secondly, when he sought a public use designation.
The agreement, irrespective of the agreement, just under the ordinance.
I don't think so, because when he sought a public use designation, which I think is basically the point of your question, they shot that down. And if I can finish a sentence
on
that.
Sure, go ahead.
A question was asked a town official, which I think is instructive. If I were to ask you today, is it your intention to prevent landings and takeoffs in Clear Lake, what would your answer be? And he said, my answer would be yes. So clearly that's what Clear Lake wants to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. And we'll